Go Lakers!
No takers.
Okay, guys. It's time to introduce our speaker for the evening, my friend and all of our friend, Bryson. Come on up.
Hi, my name's Bryson. And I'm a truly grateful member of this program. Really, really grateful. It's a little overwhelming being up here right now. And that's funny because you guys know me. I'm not usually speechless. But I think it was my sponsor laughing over there. But I don't know. It's interesting for me. I was just talking outside, actually talking to Diego and the newcomers. And I was saying, I love this meeting because it's, you know, to come here reaffirms for me an idea that was completely foreign growing up, which is that men could share their feelings. And it's a big deal for me because where I come from, my culture's really shut down and we don't talk about that. Traditionally, you know, you're supposed to say, you know, how it was, what brought you here, and how it isn't today. So I'm going to try and push into that first how it was thing. A lot of you guys know my story, so I'm going to give you the abbreviated version of that because I really am a lot about today, you know, really, really right now. When I came in here, I was not about right now. When I came in here, I was about what happened, what might happen, and what she was doing. And that was the reality that I was living in. There was not a lot happening around me. And the sad thing is, there was a lot happening around me, but I wasn't participating in any of it. And that's the story. I got to get my belt buckle out because I saw all the guys up here wearing their belt buckles. So just let you guys know, that's my redneck ID. And if they pull you over in Arkansas, that's what you show them. And Yeah, exactly. Welcome to Arkansas. I grew up down south, and there's a few things I say in every pitch. And one of the things I say in my pitch is that you know, my dad was a pro bull rider and a farmer, and you know, he treated me with all the, you know, love and care you would expect of a bull rider. I say that, you know, he's an awesome man, and I love him, and I've had some amazing, amazing experiences with my father, and I really, you know, these days, it's amazing, because for me, you know, I owe him the amends of being his friend, and this program taught me that. This program taught me, you know, that it's my job to step up and be there for my family. It's a big thing, a big concept that I never had. When I came in here, it was, what were you going to do for me? What were they going to do for me? Because I never got whatever. Another part of my story I need to tell you is I never suffered physical abuse, certainly not by Arkansas standards. Maybe. Sure. In California, they'd have probably pulled me out of the house, but I... As I see it, there was nothing going on. And the truth is, there was nothing going on. And I say that because, for me, while there wasn't physical abuse going on, what happened around me was extremely hurtful, and it shaped who I am. And in some ways, it ruined big chunks of me. And I say that because, one, as a man, I know that I have been guilty of shutting other people down. I know that my mouth has hurt more people than my fists ever have. And that was my experience. And also, if you're in this room and you go, well, it wasn't that bad, because you hear some people's pitches and it was bad every day, all the time. And I know guys in this room and I know their stories. It was horrible. And the truth is that, you know, this disease makes me minimize, and it makes me go, well, it wasn't that bad. And so I put up with things that are unacceptable. And I've lived my life putting up with things because I thought it isn't that bad. What I found in this program is I have an extremely high tolerance for pain. And I have an actual attraction to misery, absolutely. And I have also something that I believe is an addiction, you know, to anxiety and fear. And, you know, and that's a buddy of mine named Mark from Hollywood. He always says that he's a fear addict, and he likes it because it's readily available, cheap to manufacture, you know. And it's true. It's a great drug. And fear is certainly a drug that I, to this day, still indulge in. This program taught me, you know, that there was another way and that there were tools and support, you know, so that I didn't have to live like that all the time. Another thing I like to mention in my pitch is that I didn't have an alcoholic in my immediate family that I could put my finger on. My parents weren't alcoholics. My sponsor always says, I'm sure you heard it, shake an Al-Anon's family tree long enough, an alcoholic will fall out. And that's exactly the case. I started to go, well, you know, there was Aunt So-and-so that we used to have to go pick up at the Silver Moon. And then there was, you know, and then there was this. And the real thing that I've come to see through my working of the steps and through inventory is that I think I was raised by a bunch of Al-Anons. And I think that some generations back, because there was anxiety and fear and control, and that's what I grew up with, and that's what made me what I am, which, if you're looking at me, it's terrifying. But anyway, stay in this program, because this is what your kids will turn out to be. That's a pitch for keeping coming back. But the truth is that it's a big deal, and sometimes you sit in this room and it's like, well, I don't know if I qualify. You know, when I came in, I was like, oh, I don't know if I qualify. And I, the traditions, thank God for the traditions, they say the only requirement for membership is problem alcoholism and a relative or friend. And the truth is that qualifies the world. It literally does. It's not even a joke. And I know that in my life, you know, I work around alcoholism. I work with sober alcoholics. It's like where we live and how we, you know, where we work. It's like, it's all around us. And this program's given me some real tools for living. So like I said, I didn't have, you know, direct alcoholics. But I do know a lot of stories about grandparents and other people further removed that sure sound alcoholic. And that was the case. When I started to look at myself and when I started to try to understand the people that raised me and I started to try to have some compassion for the people around me, I found out some things. One of the things I found out is that my dad, when he was 4 years old, give you an idea of what kind of family we came from, my dad was in the field at 4 years old with all the guys working. And this is, you know, probably 1950 in Arkansas, which is, you know, backwoods, middle of nowhere. He didn't show up back at the wagon to get a ride back to the house, and they left him out in the field all night and wouldn't allow my grandmother to go get him. Four-year-old child. You look at a four-year-old. I look at four-year-olds now, and I can't imagine what that must have been like. I can't imagine the feeling, and I can't imagine just the hopelessness. And he curled up under a wagon, and he slept there out in the field all night. And they came back the next morning, and he was sleeping there, and they, you know, got him up, and it blows my mind. And so when I started to listen and understand someone else instead of focusing only on myself all the time and my misery and my pain and what they were doing to me, I was able to start to understand that, oh, other people had things going on that weren't about me. And it wasn't all, you know, maybe things in this world weren't completely directed at me. It's a crazy, crazy thing, the way this disease warped my perception. It's really interesting. I talked a lot in the beginning of my pitch about my dad, and that's when I came in. I felt a lot of abandonment. My parents divorced when I was 6 years old, and if you had asked me before this program if it affected me, I would have said not at all. It was fine, that it was uneventful, and nothing happened. When I went back and did some inventory, I started to find that things started to happen around that time that I'd never really thought about till I actually looked at it with outside help and with some people, you know, working with me. One thing is I remember. This is a big, big deal. I remember the first time I can remember lying to someone else. I can remember telling a lie, and I can remember how bad it felt. And I was standing at the bus stop outside the apartment that my mom and I had moved into, and I remember it was cold, and I was standing there waiting on the bus with some kids, and they said, "Where's your dad?" And I made up a story that my dad worked a lot and he came in late and left early and they never saw him, and that was the deal. And I realized that I told that lie because I didn't feel good about myself, and I didn't feel like what I had to actually say was acceptable or good enough. And that's a key part of my story. It's a key part of how other people's alcoholism affected me, how this disease came into my life and made me feel not good enough to actually just tell the truth about what was going on. You know, I don't know that I was ever able, you know, to be honest with anybody until I got in this program and came to trust people You know, it's crazy for me right now to look around this room and see all these guys and understand that I trust them. Like every one of you guys. There's every one of you guys. I've never said anything in one of these rooms that's ever come back to hurt me. I've never had anything I said bounce back or be used against me or be used in some way to harm me. And that never existed. I grew up with really rough, rough, dangerous men. And it was scary and dangerous. Part of my story that I share about is, you know, I talked to my sponsor a lot about this. He's a big proponent of working with other men and surrounding yourself and getting support from other men. And it's true. I have to say that for me, I was scared of other men, and I always thought that, you know, men were rough and scary and whatever. When I actually think about it and I really got real about what was happening, I realized that all those rough, scary men and those times that I was scared, everybody had a beer in their hand. And I realized that. And I remember that a lot of the times when I got a little older and I was really scared that there was marijuana and other drugs around. So I started to realize that, oh, wait a minute, maybe it wasn't just that these people were unsafe. Maybe there was a lot of other things going on that was making that situation chaotic. And I don't really, you know, that part of my life I don't have a lot of memory of it. But it comes back as I can, and I realize that, you know, I picked up some ideas there, basically, that didn't work for me later in life. You know, as I got a little older, this is something that was important to me. Is I feel when I was a teenager, I had the feeling that everybody else knew what was going on and knew what to do, and I didn't. You know, I had to teach myself to shave, and that's a weird thing. Which, as you see me with this damn long beard now, but I clearly haven't quite learned at 42. But I remember teaching myself to shave, and I remember feeling weird about it, not knowing if it was right. And that unease is a big part of my whole life. You know, that unease and that feeling of not in. And when you come to these rooms, one of the things they tell you to do is find out more about alcoholism. You know, go to open AA meetings and read the literature, and you'll find that those feelings that I had are the same feelings an alcoholic has. You know, I just treated them different ways. And I tried to manage them through control and through, you know, focusing on other people and not looking at myself. That was the number one thing of me. It was I was going to focus on them and work this out and control the situation and feel more at ease. And it never really worked, just like drinking never works for an alcoholic. And so it's a strange feeling for me. Just growing up without, you know, without the manual, so to speak. I came up, you know, I got into girls and found girls, and all of a sudden there was a way to make myself feel better. Part of my story is that, you know, on a good day with my hair dry, I'm 5'8" and I weigh 130 pounds. And if I said to you that didn't affect who I am, I'd be lying. You know, my physical size and stature when I was growing up made me feel less than. It made me feel scared. And it was a weird thing where I couldn't really, you know, at the time couldn't play sports, couldn't get esteem through that. So what I realized is I came up with other ways to get esteem. I didn't have any self-esteem. I had no way to make myself feel good. I had no way to get ahead. So here I am, nothing going on, and I had to figure out something. One of the ways I figured out was that I could make a girl like me. And if I could make a girl like me, then I would feel better about myself. And then I could have some sense of something going on right in my life. And from that, you know, I learned to people please. I learned to manipulate. I learned to change and shift who I was so that other people would like me. And also, I learned to place a lot of emphasis on these people around me and who and what I was associated with, because there wasn't anything inside me. So I thought, I felt empty. I felt scared. I felt alone. So if I could focus on this other person, if I could latch on to this other person, it was okay. So for me, through my whole growing up life, it was all about who she was, what she was, what she was doing, how great she was. Meanwhile, completely discounting and not even thinking about who I was, not even looking at who I was. When I came into this program, I didn't know what color I liked. I couldn't tell you what kind of food I liked to eat. I couldn't tell you anything. I remember when I was working my fourth step, I remember walking to the fridge and opening up the freezer and pulling out a frozen burrito and just saying to myself, you know, I like frozen burritos. And it was the first time that I ever could clearly say, I like frozen burritos. I didn't feel bad about it. I didn't feel like someone else had to like the frozen burrito. I just like, oh, I like frozen burritos. And that's kind of where it started for me, was the fact of like, oh, I like this frozen burrito. When I came in, I had nothing in me. I couldn't even say, you know, I would be worried about what you thought about it if I liked a frozen burrito. I worried about if you wanted a frozen burrito. Is there enough for you to have one too? And it's like, thank God, that's over. I got other things to worry about, but the frozen burrito thing is done. Gift of the steps right there. But basically, I mean, you know, that was it, is I grew up really empty and really with this just sense of unease and nothing inside me and focusing outside myself. And also, if I could control it, if I could make it work. The other important part of that was that, so here I was needing other people. You know, I need some other people to shore me up here and have some self-esteem and feel good about myself. And yet, I feel really unworthy. I don't feel like I deserve anything. And so, then you got to figure out, well, okay, wait a minute. Well, the best option in that case is the bird with the broken wing. So for me, I was always looking for to call the weak one from the herd because I knew I wouldn't get rejected. And that was my situation. It's like, I have to apologize to any of my ex-girlfriends who hear this, because before recovery, it's like, it makes it sound like that. But the truth was that I tended to do, you know, seek the lower companion, as they say in AA. And that's the thing. One thing I need to say, by the way, I talk about AA a lot. I talk about AA a lot because AA is the mother program to me, and it gave us the steps, and I've learned so much from sober alcoholics. I need to say this, that although I look like it, I'm not an alcoholic. I act like it, I sound like it, I just do not have the desire to drink. And I gotta say that because I know there's an uptight Al-Anon people out there going, oh, this guy, talking about AA at my Al-Anon meeting, you know? There is a God or there is not. That's it for me. That's what it's come down to these days. There is a God, there is not. When I get uptight, when I have that feeling in my chest, like, they're reading it wrong. He's fucking up the traditions. I remember there's a God, you know? I remember there's a God. You know? That's it. You know? You know, I had to resent you. It's awesome. I can just go, God. Handed that guy the wrong page. That must suck. It's the end of it. See, it's the end of it. That's freedom, man. That's freedom, because I got to tell you, I'd have driven home thinking about that. Not lying, man. Had to be just right. And I get into character defects about that kind of stuff a little more. But basically, just going to fast forward on through the chaos, and we'll get to that. But basically, that was my pattern, is that, you know, for me, people were a drug. And for me, you know, particularly alcoholics. And I look back now and do my inventory, and that crazy girl in high school and that crazy girl and that buddy of mine in college, or that, a lot of those people were alcoholics. And so I didn't exactly know what was going on when I came in here, know what's up. My life is marked being surrounded by alcoholics. And you know, and I have to own my part in that. That was attractive to me. You know, that was the deal. And that's what I went for. Part of my story on my mother's side is that as I got in this program, started talking, you know, I have a lot of lack issues. I have a lot of fear of lack. I have a lot of deprivation issues. And I realized that. I was like, wow, I had some neglect things going on. So I started to kind of think about it. And I was like, wow, you know, like we didn't really have much money when I was like in my teenage years and early teenage years and stuff. And so thinking about like always in school, like having to borrow paper and to borrow a pencil and stuff. So I got to talk to my mom after a few years in program and kind of brought this up and talked to her about that. And she was like completely confused. She was like, what are you talking about? And I thought, well, you know, mom's in denial. You know, she doesn't want to admit this or whatever, right? You're like, okay, well, that's cool. I'll just leave it. We talked a little bit more, and I realized that it actually was the case, that we were fine, and we had enough money, and I never lacked for anything except for the fact September came around, and we went to the store, and we bought me all the pencils and pens and stuff that I needed to go to school with, and then long around December or January, when all that stuff ran out, I didn't have it in me to ask my mom to go back to the store. wasn't her fault. My mom would have taken me anywhere and bought me anything. I couldn't ask. So needless, wantless. We talk about that in this program a lot. I somehow along the way, I got the idea that I wasn't worth buying a pencil and that I didn't deserve that. So I couldn't ask. Also, I was scared of being told no, scared of rejection. So here I was, this little guy that didn't have a pencil because I couldn't ask. That's my life. That's followed me through my whole life. God has laid stuff in front of me consistently throughout my life, you know, and I walk away or back away, you know, can't pick it up. And that's a hallmark of what this disease has done to me. This is how it has affected me. It left me that way, needless, wantless. When the truth is I have needs and I have things I want, you know. I couldn't dream before I came to this program. Could not dream. Could not say to you what I want. Could not say to you even, wow, I would like whatever. You know, it's the craziest thing. It's a crazy thing. I bought myself a car recently, and it's huge because, you know, even to have the thought that I might want to do it, and then to decide what I wanted, and then to vocalize that to other people and not be shamed about it. You know, I was, for me, anything where I come from, it's not going to work out. You know, I was told it's not going to work out. You know, I was raised by farmers. Farmers take out a loan, and you hope the crop comes in to pay back that loan. Most of the time, it doesn't. Because why? Because it rains, because things go wrong. So what do? You spend your whole life trying to control the weather, trying to control the world. And you're scared to death that crop's not going to come in. And most of the time, it doesn't. And you see failure around you all the time. I brought that here. I brought that to my current career, to my life, to my relationships. You know, it's that sadness, that crazy thing. And it's you know, it staggers me how long in my life that I ignored the fact that there clearly, in my opinion, is a higher force at work. I use the word God. It probably doesn't look like your God. He probably doesn't sound like your God. And that's cool with me, you know. And that's the biggest thing about this, too. When I came in, you know, man, I grew up with a God that loved me and wanted to kill me. And that was the straight-up truth. They told me that. I went there and said, by the way, God loves you, and he's probably going to kill you. And that was the deal. Absolutely my experience with God. And that was not working for me because I had a whole life. I had a whole life that I couldn't share with that God. So basically what ended up happening is I had to, you know, okay, there's Saturday night Bryson, and there's Sunday morning Bryson. And that was really bad. My God goes with me Saturday night now. You know, I have a higher power now that, you know. And for me... For me, it's tied to sponsorship, and I'll tell you how that works for me. Josiah's my sponsor, and I love him very much. He's absolutely changed my life, and I can't even mention it without choking up. I love him so much, you know. And he taught me to trust people. He taught me to trust men, and he gave me the idea, you know, that I could open up to somebody, and that stuff wouldn't come back at me, and I wouldn't get hurt. Huge concept for me because I had this vengeful God and had all these men that were shaming me and all these people around me that you know were kind of my peers that were hurting me with whatever I shared. So it wasn't ever safe to do it. And this the way this program worked for me was I didn't really have a God I could trust. So I came in here and I said, oh, okay, well, let's see what's going to happen here. And basically through working with a sponsor, I started to understand. And one thing I'll tell you is if you don't have a sponsor right now, like get a sponsor you don't know. And this is a big deal. Get a sponsor you'll never see socially. Get a sponsor that you don't even care about. And I talk about this all the time because I had to be able to be completely honest. I had to be able to pick up that phone and just say what was going on. I needed one place in my life that I could say how I felt. I didn't have to say I was fine. I needed one place I could go where I could actually say, yeah. Because when you get into doing inventory, you need to say what you did. You need to say, you need to get that stuff out. And that was the situation for me. You know, I found a guy that, you know, it's like, okay, I want what that guy has. And, you know, I don't have any reason to lie to him. That was the first time, probably first experience with being truthful in the whole world. And then from that, I was able to model kind of an idea that might work in the rest of the world. And then, you know, he helped me come up with a concept of a higher power that I could talk to and that I could trust my life to. Get on through the mess. surround myself with crazy, chaotic women. I get into a career where I'm guaranteed to be surrounded by some chaos, which is awesome. And I still say that I don't think I got into that for any reason other than I just like being around crazy people, and that was awesome. Around drug addicts and alcoholics, absolutely, you know, death-defying, terrifying life. Absolutely. Like, in places I shouldn't have been. And I'm really such a wuss. I'm really such a wimp. And that's the funny thing in my story is that, you know, I was never the guy going to jail. I was the guy going to bail people out of jail. You know, I was the dude always driving everybody home. I didn't drink because I had such control issues. I didn't like to drink because then I was out of control. And also, if I was sober, then I was going to take care of everything and people would like me. And that would give me some esteem. Not self-esteem, but give me some esteem, some other esteem. And that was a big deal for me, too. Also, if I had a girl that was really, 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 really messed up, then I looked great. I looked awesome. I was a saint. I was a saint. And that's the way my life was. I had all these crazy, horrible people. And I was the best thing in the room. Yeah. Right? Wow. Oh, that's nice. Oh, look, that's the prettiest turd. That was me. And the truth was is that I was doing all the same stuff. You know, I was doing it in secret. Had that secret life. You know, had that life that you didn't know about. Had this front that I was putting up and doing. And then I'm lying and cheating and sleeping around with people and doing all those things, which then, of course, made me feel worse. You know, so I feel worse about myself. So then, oh, well, what do I do? I got to medicate with that and do whatever it is that I got to do that makes me feel better. And for me, people pleasing, control, manipulation, all these things, this horrible downward spiral in my life. And that continued on until basically, you know, the universe put in my path just absolutely the perfect storm. I want to tell you that I came into Al-Anon twice. And I tell you that because I'll tell you my experience. A lot of what you hear tonight is not my suggestion, it is my experience. And you'll hear why. I met this girl that was everything in the world I thought that I wanted and everything that I needed. It was awesome, awesome. I always talk about this because I'm a great supporter of the arts. I always say this in all my pitches. And this girl was an artist. She was a dancer. Her chosen art. Not just like some kind of regular dancer. She was like, she was unusual dancer. Some even called her an exotic dancer. Awesome. It's no plain old ballet dancing, man. But, and it was textbook, man. I mean, it was textbook. It was just like, wow. Let me give you a quote here. We called her mama because one day she was leaving and I was going to keep her like 2-year-old child. And she was like, Tyler, you be good. Mama's got to go take her clothes off and make that money. It's a true story. Dark. Dark. So anyway, there I was living the dream. Paying her rent, you know, like just, man, everything you can do wrong. Resenting her, mad at her, controlling, everything in the book. When you read the don'ts, that was me. And just living that life as the don't. And basically, just mind-blowing when I think about it now. And what ended up happening is where it took me, basically, is, and this is my moment of clarity. I luckily had an assistant at the time that worked in the office with me, and she was sober, and she was in Al-Anon. And she showed up one day, and I had an office in my house, and I was wearing fuzzy slippers and boxer shorts and a wife beater, and I was bawling at my desk, just like crying my eyes out, sitting in my big chair, just like, blah! Like, a vision for you. And she rolled in. So good. She rolled in and she was like, okay. And I told her the story, you know, for the 400th time of what was going on. And she wrote down a little piece of paper. She's like, go here and see Beverly tonight at like 7:30 or whatever. And it was Tuesday night, Little White Chapel in Burbank. And it's so rad. Josiah talks about this all the time. It was blue-haired ladies. I'm not lying, man. It was blue-haired ladies. Blue-haired ladies in the valley. And it was awesome. And I'm like, rolling. I'm like, hey, whoa, wow. And I We were just like, wow, this is strange. And I don't know, man. It was good because the sense of like I didn't have to impress anybody was beautiful. And then the second thing that happened was they said some things that sounded like me. You know, this is a beautiful thing in sharing, and it's a big deal. It's one thing I like about Al-Anon is the non-specific way we should share in a general way. And the thing I like about it is that if somebody tells me details, it takes me out of it because I start thinking about the detail. They tell me where they went on a trip. I start thinking about either why I didn't go or how much better the trip that I took was. You know, that's the kind of way my brain works. It takes me out of it. They tell me how they feel, then I can get it. Tell me about their job, I might feel less than. Tell me how they feel about their job, I bet I'll relate. And that's just my experience. But that's how I try to be very general about stuff because I realize that those specifics. Had I gotten specific with those ladies, I had nothing in common. But because they were general and they talked about their feelings, they talked about their higher powers, they talked about the steps, they talked about the things we're supposed to talk about in here, all of a sudden, I could relate and I understood it. And I went back. And I kept going back. And here was my plan. Let me lay it out for you. I would read a little bit of literature. I would go to that one meeting a week. Didn't really call anybody. Didn't get a sponsor. Didn't make any friends in the program. And after, I don't know, 6 months or something, I started dating this woman that went to the damn meeting. And so let me tell you that at this point right there, that's like about the worst thing that you can do in any situation, you know, at all. So what ended up happening was is that here I was, a 13-step this woman. That kind of went badly because I was all jacked up and weird and crazy like you are when you come in for 6 months. And... So here I'm, no support, no sponsor, no guidance, no nothing, no steps, no traditions, no nothing. Wow. And I left. And it's unbelievable, I know, but I left. And so, I don't know why. It didn't work for me. That's all I'm telling you people. It did not work for me. So, that's it. That's it. Just, no, anyway, clearly at the end of the story. But so it didn't work for me. But, you know, I had it in my head, and I had enough Al-Anon to be dangerous and tell all my friends how they ought to live. What they should be doing, how much better my life was. Still a wreck, still completely out of my mind. And then, you know, I think God was just like, all right, well, that was a close call, but that didn't really get him. And so the story that Josiah got to hear when I first finally got him as my sponsor is basically this. I went out to the desert with my gay, sober friend, and when we came home, she was not acting gay, she was no longer sober, and she was not my friend. And that's the deal. That's all I gotta say. That's the story. Awesome. Like, that's like the unavailability Olympics right there. You're like, what? And my friends were like, all my friends were there just watching. Like, well, no, hi, wait, no way. They describe it as watching a car wreck in slow motion. And, so awesome. And you know what? Thanks to this program, I'm friends with that girl today. I've made amends to that girl. And I saw her a couple of months ago. And you know, and it's just a beautiful thing. She's married to a buddy of mine. And, you know, I'm just like, wow, awesome. But I got to say that, you know, the part about the alcoholism, like picking right back up where it left off, she had been sober for 8 years, and the descent into madness was unbelievable. Absolutely. It was rocketed back to the bottom. And I was right there with her. You know, a friend of mine actually says, you know, I hit the bottom chasing after you. And that was the deal. She was headed down, and I was hanging on. And that was the deal. It was amazing to watch. When I look back now, incredibly painful time in my life. Unbelievable I don't know how I got there. I don't know how I got that, you know, that messed up. But I was miserable. I like to tell people that, you know, I got a gift. I talked to you earlier about not having any self-esteem. About, you know, about coming up and in this disease stripped me of my self-esteem. So I built up some things around me so that I had some other esteem. And so what happened in my recovery was God, one by one, took all those things away. And basically left me with very little to hang on to. And I like to say that God took a lot of that away. It's like, you're hanging on to some money there? Gone. Okay, cool. Oh, you think, okay, the girl's going to make you feel better? Okay, gone. Okay, oh, you got this little thing going on? Gone. And what I found was is that once I got into recovery and started figuring out that I was going to have to actually fill myself up from the inside and fill myself up with God and figure it out, that then later I decided, and I took some of those things away because I wanted to have that experience. And what this program taught me was that I was lovable. After a couple of weeks, a buddy of mine, first thing I did, I got a call to a buddy of mine when this girl said, this is the best thing about it is, here she is, drunk, crazy, out of everything going nuts, you know, headed towards rehab. And she goes, you are scaring me and you need to get some help. And that's what I heard. And that's how crazy I was. That's nuts. And I remembered Al-Anon. I was like, maybe, you know what? Maybe I need to go to Al-Anon. Maybe I should go back to Al-Anon. And I called a buddy of mine that I knew was a double winner. And he took me to a meeting, and I was like, cool, this is going to be all right. And we went to a few meetings, and then I remember we went to Barefoot Friday night meeting, and he's an alcoholic. And he's like, I think I'm going to go to the AA meeting. You go to that other meeting. And I went over to that other room, and it was kind of freaked out and weird, you know, a couple weeks back and everything. And I was sitting there, and I heard my sponsor talking, and I was like, well, maybe I'll ask that guy. And so all of a sudden, it's like, well, okay, well, I have a sponsor. Well, cool. And it's kind of interesting. It's like that was an esteemable act. I asked somebody to be my sponsor, and it didn't kill me. You know, so I talked to him a little bit, and I read some books, started reading the books. It was like, oh, that's kind of crazy. That's kind of working. And we started, you know, kind of talking about the steps. And one thing I want to mention is that I went back to that Tuesday night meeting that I'd gone to before when I came back in. And I want to tell you this. I tell you always the slipping out story so that when you slip out, you can go, oh, I remember when Bryson said, I went back and it was awesome because nobody there said, well, you're back. Nobody made me feel bad. Nobody shamed me. Nobody said anything. Everybody said, it's good to see you. So good to see you. And that's the experience. I come to this meeting like once a year. And I'll tell you what's awesome is when I come back, the guys all say, man, it's good to see you. You know, nobody says where you been. What are you doing? You still go to meetings? Nobody, you know, they may be thinking it. They may be judging me silently. That's awesome. And I know you are. It's all good. The good news is that, you know, it's enough recovery in this room that they let me have my program. It's beautiful. Just so you all know, I have a home group and I regularly attend meetings, just not this one all the time. So there you go. Got to put that on the record here. But so good. So basically, you know, that started getting me into the idea that I might actually could get into this program. And it helped that I had some buddies that were in recovery and I could get it. And that's something for me that's a big deal. It's like surround yourself with people that you relate to and you know, men that you can work with and be around. So this time I had a sponsor. I'll tell you some other stuff I did. I'm really bad about going to meetings, and I will not go to a meeting regularly a lot of times. I kind of skip around and this and that. So to trick myself, I took service commitment. And it's a huge one, man. It's a huge one. Particularly when you're new because you don't know that no one's going to like shame you, right? You know, you don't know you can do it wrong. So you're freaked out and you're there every week early and everything. It's all great, you know? And that's the beautiful thing about that, you know? The good news is I'll just tell you this right now. I've made crappy coffee in this program. I've been a grumpy, crappy greeter at this program. I know I scared some newcomers off. Like, whoa. Do not want what he has. I've done every service commitment you can do. I've done every one of them half-assed. And I'll just tell you that. No one's ever thrown me out. Some little old ladies have kind of told me how to do it, but that's a great thing. I was the snack lady at the Monday night, and I'll tell you this. It was awesome because I had to get over a resentment because I would show up at like 20 till. And there would be some lady there putting the hot water, you know, putting water in the coffee thing. And I'd be like, don't tell me how to do this, la, 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 la. She wasn't. She just was helping out. But in my mind, that lady was, she was making me feel, she's trying to shame me by putting the coffee in the thing. And, da, 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 da. And that's how crazy my head was. And when I stopped for a minute and actually did a little 10th step on it, all of a sudden it was like, you know what? Maybe that lady's not a jerk. You know, maybe that lady is just actually being of service too, and I should just let her. But me, so worried about what I looked like, so worried about she was thinking of me, you know, wrecking myself, wrecking my day right there, mad when I should have been grateful. That's another hallmark of my life, mad when I should have been grateful. You know, that's the deal of it, man. You get to a certain point in this program and in this life, and it's all a gift. You know, it all is. We got it pretty good. At my bottom, I had a place to live. I had food. I had a job. You know, I can't tell you enough about how important it is to actually just look at what you have, even at the bottom. Because the bottom in this country is still pretty good compared to the rest of the world. Let's tell you right now. You know, and so that's exactly my experience. Is that, you know, that's a big deal. It's a big deal, man. You know, I can remember the worst times of my life. I can still find something to be happy about, and that helped a little bit to, you know, get me out of this. I want to run it through quickly. What my experience was, the steps. I'll tell you this again. It's my experience, not my suggestion. Right now, I'm currently avoiding the eighth step. I'll tell you that. That's the only explanation I have for it. Is I have not worked the eighth step, and I've not started the eighth step. So anyway. But I'll tell you this, I work the steps badly and haltingly, but when I do, I recover and I feel better. And I'll tell you that. And if you're new in this program, find somebody and do it. I run all my sponsees through the steps kind of like they're in jail, because for me, I'm a perfectionist and I use the steps to punish myself. I took 2 years to do a fourth step. You know, my sponsor didn't make me do that. He just kind of let me do it and watched me and was kind of, I'm sure, puzzled, but he allowed it. So another thing that's beautiful in this program is my sponsor allows me to do whatever it is that I got to do it. You know, this program's about letting that happen. And I think about it sometimes, like what it must take to actually sit and watch me live my life through my early recovery. But I'll tell you what, again, never shamed, you know, never beaten up, never told I had to do something, and never fired. It's a beautiful thing. You know, I did this program wrong and imperfectly, and it allowed me to heal my perfectionism by doing that. Here's how the steps work for me. When I came in, couldn't admit I was powerless over anything. I believed that I could control it, but I have to say that unmanageability part really got me, because it was a whole stack of unmanageable. And then I was able to look at that, and my sponsor was able to help me see how, oh, these could be some things you're powerless over, because if you had power over them, you might be managing them. And all of a sudden, I tricked myself into working the first step and giving up and saying, okay, all right, I'm powerless, and this stuff is unmanageable. I've admitted it. What's next? Got to find a God. Big thing that I did about a year ago or something, I think, we had to do this thing where we were talking about, a lot of times we do this thing where we hold the mirror up and we say, I love you, to yourself in the mirror, which you can laugh at it, man, but I bet a good half of you in this room will have trouble doing it. Chokes me up to this day. And something that I said, talking about the second step, was straight up, is to actually say to God, I believe that you will restore me to sanity. Gives me a weird feeling to do it right now. I got chill bumps. Just to say out loud, I believe that you will restore me to sanity. Not that I will do it, you know, because if I could do it on my own, I would have done it. But I believe that I will be restored by my higher power. And you guys, in my estimation, are all part of my higher power. You've helped restore me to sanity. Helped give me that keel. So, okay, I believe that it could happen. You know, not that it necessarily will, but I believe that I can be restored to sanity. That sets me up for the third step, which is I turn my will and my life over to the care of power greater than myself. Big word for me is the care, because I came in here thinking that I wasn't worth taking care of. I came in here thinking that I wasn't worth a pencil. You know, I came here feeling like that, and that's how I felt. And the idea that a God might take care of me and that I might could let go of all the stuff that I'm doing and just let it happen was pretty powerful. You know, all of a sudden, it's like I can drop it. I can allow to see. And then at that point, my job is just to do the footwork, show up every day for it. Inventory, fourth step. I got this God that I believe in now, and I believe he's going to take, you know, help me out here. I believe that God's running the show. I made a decision to turn my will and my life over. Now I'm going to take an inventory and actually see what's going on. Because I was running through life not looking, scared to look behind myself. I always describe the fourth step. People always talk about that. You know, I've got to say, I don't want to open that door. If I open that closet door, that stuff's going to fall on me. Oh, my God. I tell you this. The fourth step, your inventory and your past is not a closet. It's a backpack. It's a backpack, and it's on you. And the process of inventory is taking things out of that backpack. And that's all it is. It's already on top of you. Don't think it's going to fall on you because you're carrying it. You just don't know. And that was the case for me. I was worn out from carrying this. Let me tell you what. So get in there, talk to my sponsor, say, well, this is who I was. What I found out, same thing everyone finds out. You're all right. I'm all right. You know, the experience of sharing my fifth step with a sponsor and sharing everything and shit that I was going to take to the grave, just stuff that I couldn't, just when I finish that and have a guy say, "That's awesome and I love you," all of a sudden I came to believe a little bit that I might be lovable. I came to believe that I might actually just inherently be lovable. That Friday night meeting, after a year of being in that meeting, I want to share a quick story. I realized that every Friday night, somebody would come up and hug me. Oftentimes, it was you. And people would come up and hug me and say, "Hey, good to see you." Hated myself. Hated myself so much when I came to this party. My whole life I've hated myself. I have to. And you know how I know that? Because when I look at my inventory, I treated myself like someone I hate. You go, "Oh, I don't hate myself." You do an inventory with a guy like me, and I look at this string of things that I did to myself. You know what? If I don't hate myself, then what is that? What's going on? You know, but those people, every Friday night I showed up, I take that goofy commitment or whatever it was that got me through the door, and they would say, "Good to see you." And I realized, I cried at year one because I realized that I'd come there every week for a year and those people absolutely loved me. And I'm a person that believes that everyone knows better than me. So if you know better than me and you think that I'm all right, then once again, I've tricked myself into understanding that I might be all right. Fifth step worked exactly that way. I shared my darkest stuff and God didn't turn their back on me and my sponsor didn't turn their back on me. And I started to understand maybe I wasn't such a horrible person after all and that maybe it would be okay. You know, set aside here and go down. Six, entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. The truth is, six and seven for me have been a really weird thing, kind of flipped around. You know, it's like, it's such a strange thing for me because, you know, we talk a lot, my sponsor talks a lot about in six, figuring out what it is that you want to be. What kind of man are you going to be now? What are you going to do when you take all this stuff away, when all this stuff's gone? You know, what's going to happen with it? And for me, I have to tell you that, you know, I wasn't ready until very recently. I was resistant and hanging on to stuff. You know, I could not abandon myself. And then comes back to faith. Can I believe in God? If I can believe in God, then I can believe that I can let go of all this stuff that's been working, which not really. All this stuff that I think has been working has been making me feel okay, even though it doesn't. And just see what's new. You know, I'm going to get, I think I got, what, about 5 minutes? What do I got here? Can you send me a timer? Who's got time? Oh, but then we're fine, man. Come on, I'll talk fast. But for me, in the case of that, you know, that was a big thing at that point was, okay, you're here. You've got these defects of character. We talked about some of them, judgment. You know, I'll sit in this room, you know, and I have to fight myself not to judge people in any room, in any situation. I'm judging the hell out of people. Judgment, fear, absolutely terrified. How can I be afraid? You know, if there's God or there's not. God is running the show or is not. You know, if you be afraid, that's just hanging on to that control. You know, I talk about a lot of times in faith, it's like bowling. You go out there bowling, you know, and I'm a good like 100 bowler most of the time. I break three digits sometimes. And you bowl, and if you notice, like a guy's not a good bowler, you throw the ball, and then you're doing all this crazy whipping to get it to move, and you're doing all that, and then, and it's like, you know, I don't know if any of you know anything about physics, but you're not really doing anything with that. It doesn't really work that way. It's out of your hands, you know what I mean? And that's the way of my life. I want to get free. I want to get free so I can just show up and roll the ball. You know, biggest thing I did in my life is I wouldn't roll the ball because I knew that once I let go of it, I couldn't control it anymore. That's the deal, man. Like, you can't get a strike unless you let go of the ball. Good grief. Anyway. The awesome thing also about being so comfortable in this room is I have no idea what I've said. I know. I'm going to get this tape in like a month. I'll be driving around listening to it. I'll be laughing my ass off. Like, that's hilarious. No idea. But, you know, I don't have to, man. I don't have to. You know, I trust that there's something else driving the show. You know, I can just let go and say, all right, we'll see what it is. See what's going to happen. You know, I wasn't nervous coming in here because I don't have to know what I'm going to say. I'm here to be a service. And you know what? Maybe y'all needed to hear a crappy speaker. You know, straight up, man. I've choked. I choked at a convention one time, like in front of a few hundred people, man. I was just like, I got nothing. And you know what's great is that I was able to just say, I got nothing. and stop for a minute and meditate and get quiet. And all of a sudden, you know what? I had some stuff to say. Weirdest thing, man. Stop and ask once again. You know, stop and ask. You know, get out of that fear, get out of the crazy place of what I have to do and let my higher power do it. Now it's the biggest deal for me ever. Can I just trust it's something bigger than me? You know, God has brought me better than I ever could have dreamed. Today, you know, I don't have that girl. I don't have either of those girls I came here about. I don't have either one of them. And I'm obsessed, crazy obsessed over them. And guess what? It wasn't really love. I didn't understand it. I didn't know what love was about. This program taught me what love was about. Acceptance, you know, grace, ease, easy. I have a beautiful relationship. You know, I have an amazing relationship today. I have a girl I love so much, and she's so wonderful. And you know what? I don't have any control over it. You know, anything could happen. Could last a day, could last a lifetime. And either way, I'm grateful for what I got right now. So that's all I got. You know, I have a wonderful career. I have a career that is exceeding my wildest dreams. Hilarious. It's just, I wake up every day and laugh. I love what I do. And, you know, and I'm just craziness. What I did is I got out of my way. I stopped using my idea. I started to really get the idea that God had some idea and that I should just shut up and let it happen. Because I was the one that was going to, and I had done that and wrecked myself. You know, my sponsor taught me to negotiate. My number one negotiating skill is just shut up. Shut up. Just say it and be quiet. See what somebody else says. You know, what's crazy is they usually don't say anything and it just is done. And that's something, things like that. Simple things I learned in this program. You know, let go of my idea. The third step for me is like, it's no longer my idea. Because guess what? I wouldn't have dreamed it. I wouldn't have dreamed the people I'm involved with. You know, I wouldn't have dreamed the men that are in my life, the guys in this room. I never dreamed this would work out for me. You're crazy. I'm from Arkansas. We don't do anything like this, man. Men do not do this. Men like drink and fight in Arkansas. That's all we're good for. And somebody asked me, I remember I was like 14. Somebody said to my dad, hey, you wasn't crazy when you were young, wasn't you? He said, well, I couldn't fuck, I fought. And I'm like, wow. And that's like what I came up with. That was what you were going to get, one or the other. Al-Anon has given me at least a third option, I'll tell you that. Oh, I love this room. Anyway, I hope you guys got something out of this tonight. You know, I just want to say, it's like, you know, it's all here. You know, it's amazing to get to come back and just regurgitate what I heard in these rooms. You know, I don't have any original thoughts or ideas in this. This is what I got coming, sitting in these rooms, reading the literature, working the steps, working with other men. You know, I may still be on the phone list here. If not, come get my number if you want to talk to me. Every call is a blessing. I want any of you guys new or any of you guys who don't call people to know, you don't know how many times my butt has been saved by a phone call from somebody else saying, hey, man, can you talk for a second? It always pulls me out, you know. I'm no longer in charge of my life. I take it back all the time. I take it back every day, and I try to give it back. I'll let you know, for me, you know, I do what I can. I wake up every day. I hit my knees. I try to be grateful for what I've got. You know, I try to understand that, you know, I'm not the center of the universe. There may be somebody else out there having some sort of day, you know, something happening with them. It may not be about me. None of that stuff can I do on my own. None of this. It's not a self-help program. You know, it's a 12-step program, and it's all about having guys like you in my life. Thank you very much.